This episode of the 9 to 5 Mac Security Byte podcast is sponsored by Mosel. Deploying, managing, and protecting Apple devices at work shouldn't be difficult or require several solutions. Mosel is the only Apple unified platform for business. Mosel's integrated approach to management and security combines state-of-the-art Apple-specific security solutions for fully automated hardening and compliance, next-generation EDR, AI-powered Zero Trust, and exclusive privilege management with the most powerful and modern Apple MDM on the market. The result is a totally automated Apple unified platform currently trusted by over 45,000 organizations to make millions of Apple devices work ready with no effort and at an affordable cost. By combining enhanced device management, endpoint security, internet privacy and security, single sign-on, and enhanced app management into a single Apple-only platform, businesses can now easily and automatically deploy, manage, and protect their Apple devices automatically with one solution at an affordable price. With a solution for every business size and the best support in the market, start a free 30-day trial and see firsthand why Mosel is more than an Apple MDM. Mosel is everything you need to work with Apple. To learn more, visit business.mosel.com. That's business.mosyle.com. Thanks to Mosel for sponsoring the 9 to 5 Mac Security Byte podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Security Byte podcast. I'm your host, as always, Aaron Wychulis, and today we're talking about one of the most popular and one of the most effective techniques threat actors are doing to get malware on Macs today. By the headline of the episode, you probably guessed it, we're talking about ClickFix. In fact, according to Microsoft's 2025 Digital Defense Report, ClickFix was the most common initial access method last year, accounting for 47% of reported attacks. Basically, that's nearly half of all breaches in 2025 involved ClickFix to some capacity. While that data is from 2025 detections, today, ClickFix hasn't gone anywhere. We're still seeing it widely used as a vector to infect Mac users in many specific ways. Now, there's a lot to unpack here, so I'm excited to be joined by two notable Apple security professionals to help better make sense of it all. I want to welcome Christopher Lopez, or Lopesec, on social media, a macOS iOS reverse engineer, and second-time returning guest, Ksenia, malware research engineer at Moonlock Lab, also known as OSINT Barbie. Thank you for coming on, both of you. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
Thank you a lot.
So for those who might be unaware, ClickFix is a social engineering technique that has gained traction across platforms since 2024. The way it works is pretty simple. While there are a bunch of different versions of how the ClickFix method could be implemented, one of the more common ones we're seeing on Mac, though one could argue it's sort of on the downhill now, is presenting a problem to the user, offering a terminal command as a fix, and hope the end user is able to follow through on that by posting the malicious command in the terminal. After that, Bob's your uncle. A compromise has likely occurred. Can you guys shed some light on particular examples of this that you're seeing, of just the social engineering part? We'll start with the basics, and then we'll talk about the specific malware that's dropped next.
So maybe I can start from here. I'm more like threat intel, threat hunter person, so maybe I can say more about that part. Talking about the most popular lures we can see among our users, Clean My Mac and Moonlock's users, when there is like fake Zoom meetings or fake Google meetings, whatever, when people being approached by threat actors on LinkedIn, offering them not just job like it was before, but they do better reconnaissance right now. They see, for example, if you have some additional projects, whatever, so they want to like talk to you about your stuff, your projects, your presentations, what do you have. So approach became like more, I would say, individual at that point. And I even saw examples when the person kind of said that she was approached by someone in Telegram and she knew the person, she has already kind of conversation with that person, yes, and she said that I saw that person in real life, but probably the account was compromised and they just used it, you know, and they kind of so at that moment the victim kind of can't do much because she's pretty sure it's the person I met in real life. So that's scary part about that. And I think I maybe we can just recommend users from that point to if someone asks you to join the meeting, don't use their links, but ask them to join your link, like on Google Meet, for example. So it's kind of can help you to protect yourself a little mm-hmm. bit at least.
So how exactly does ClickFix sort of tie into that?
So first of all, they kind of send you that link to the meeting. You join the meeting and it says that you have some problems with audio or something, like some errors pop up, and they ask you to fix it. That's why it's ClickFix, because they show you the instruction, yes, step-by-step guide how to fix it, and they ask you to copy paste the command into your terminal and run the loader for malware. Or they also can ask you to download some files like DMG or like other archive to just run it on your machine. Yeah.
So you mentioned these people are being interviewed for a job. Who exactly are falling for these scams? Is it more developers or grandparents?
So I've seen a lot of developers get targeted recently, which is very interesting, because that's kind of an entryway into much more complicated compromises. But yeah, I mean, just about anyone can be targeted by this type of stuff. But I think that the more advanced ones are definitely, there's a lot of research that's done in order to pick your targets. But yeah, so anyone can fall victim to it if you're not really paying attention to what's going on and you haven't seen this type of threat before.
Do they implement a sense of urgency too, or do they just rely on negligence and a nice looking web page that looks like it's from Apple or something?
Yeah, urgency, and as was mentioned by Ksenia, a lot of these people that are getting targeted, especially devs that are like in the job interview process, like they're just trying to get a job, you know, like they're just trying to like move this forward. Mm-hmm. They're just trying to like, yeah, I'll click whatever. And don't forget, I'm not throwing shots at Apple or anything, but we've gotten very accustomed to just saying yes to stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, let's just keep it going. You know, this prompt comes up. I just want to get this to work. You know, I just want it to work, you know? So, no shots at Apple. it's just what it is. You know, users have been trained to click accept to keep things rolling. So I feel like threat actors have definitely taken advantage of that.
Right. So, I mean, let's give Apple props here, because what was it? October of 2024, they released Sequoia, that patched the right click to open gatekeeper bypass. And that was working for a while to sort of help stop these DMG files, right, from opening mm-hmm. up that contain malicious mm-hmm. malicious code. And then just recently in Mac OS 26.4, they dropped the terminal paste prompts, where if you're pasting malicious code into terminal, you sort of get this prompt that says, like, are you sure you want to do this? And it looks very frightening. So, I mean, Apple is doing some things, but...
Let's also mention Patrick, because Patrick did develop a solution for this. Mm-hmm. Open source solution, which is pretty cool. And yeah, Apple has done some things for this. I know Sal over at Jamf, he'd had like a Twitter thread about how the new protections work, which are pretty interesting. And, you know, it's pretty genius, I guess, because it's really hard to figure out like the best way to stop someone from copy pasting something into their terminal. Like, you want to target specific types of people. And if you read through the thread, it's actually really interesting, because they like, you have to have like the developer directory path on your system. You have to have certain things in order to for that prompt to actually even spawn. I actually reached out to Sal and I was like, I'm having a hard time spawning this on a machine. So he gave me some tips, because there's like things that you have to actually change so that they're only making those protections possible on a system that would never do something like that. So they made it very behavioral based. Like, this user that's okay. on this machine should never be copy pasting something to the terminal. Unlike me, I copy paste stuff onto my terminal all the time, you know? So, you know, I need to grab a virus total thing. I'll grab a hash, copy it, VT, command out.
I mean, you also almost run malware. So for you?
Yeah. But, you know, I'm on a VM, you know? So it's all good. But yeah, it's actually pretty interesting, the protection that they put in place. And so it's only really for a select group of people, but unfortunately it the developer path itself, like, this is not for developers to be protected, which is interesting.
I would add here, so I wanted to add, I just recalled that moment you mentioned in 2024, when Apple released protection against that gatekeeper bypass with right clicking on the icon. I remember we were at MacWoz office. Do you remember the moment I had my presentation? Then you and Patrick, I think, or I don't remember, or Mikey, you came to me and to my team, and we were like, oh, look, like threat actors already bypassing it. It was like a few hours after Apple released that. So it's like the cat mouse game, like, it just can't stop.
Yeah, I actually do remember. We were all standing in a circle at MacPaws headquarters in Kyiv, and we saw someone brought up that the news broke, and we're like, oh my gosh, no way.
Yeah, that was that moment. And we were like, oh, it's gonna help everyone, like, with what threat actors could do with that, how they would deal with that, and boom.
What was that, the DMG prompt, and then you copy the thing to the terminal to execute it instead? Was that like that bypass there? Okay, yeah, that was pretty clever. Yeah, that's cool. That was pretty interesting.
And it's so easy to look back and be like, well, duh, that wasn't gonna work. But at the time, we were like, oh, this is great that they're doing this. And yeah, it's a tug of war, like you mentioned.
So I do have a question. I don't remember, because it's been going on for so long now. Every time I see a new ClickFix article, it kind of blurs. I'm like, all right, I don't know. What else is happening now? Was this first on Windows? I believe it was.
That's what I was. Yeah, so when I was doing research for this podcast, I did see that it kind of started on Windows in 2024. And then and then it hit Mac in 2025. Yeah.
Okay. And
October.
I remember early days, Alden's blog post, I think it was related to Brew or something like that, where it was a lure for Brew. Yeah. And it had, remember that? It was a long time ago now, where it looked like a homebrew site. And it was obfuscated and whatever. I think it was Base64 encoded, which is whatever. But again, it was one of those, I'm going to install Homebrew. And this is like back, I think it's 2024. So I was trying to think about when this first started happening. I think it was one of those lures.
Yeah, I think then. So. I remember Olin from Birch Boy, aka Birch Boy from Twitter, reported that Homebrew thing. Yeah.
And that was pretty effective. Again, targeting people that are installing Homebrew. So devs. And stuff like that.
Right. And, you know, I was covering a story at the time, and I if I recall, I think that this same vector was being promoted on Google Ads.
Yeah. Yes.
I think that was like the way they were getting it out there was getting it ranked on Google Ads, which sounds crazy, but it actually still happens today.
Yeah, I mean, they can't deal much with Google Ads because some of accounts being hijacked. And Google thinks that it's a good account, like they proved already their identity, everything, but accounts are being hijacked all the time and threat actors just leverage it.
Like Apple developer accounts and how they get past like the notarization. I hear that there's like a whole underground like black market where Apple accounts are being sold to threat actors so they can have apps out that are notarized.
Those are huge stories. When they, you know, when someone finds one of those types of things. I haven't seen anything recently.
I saw a few times Odyssey Stealer, it's kind of Amos fork. They use pretty often the Apple developers account, but most of the time it's like Russian or Ukrainian names. So yeah, that's kind of. I'm not blaming anyone. Maybe they also were hijacked. I don't know. But
speaking of Amos, you know, normally I would bring up Amos or Atomic Stealer. From what I understand, it sort of disappeared in 2025, correct?
Yeah, I don't know what happened exactly, but they just put the FBI seizure picture on their panel. Yeah, that kind of pretending that they were caught by FBI or something, or Interpol, but actually they were not. It wasn't true, but they went underground. I don't know, many of developers lately, they went private, because before we could see a lot of advertisement on dark web forums, and now most of them went to private solutions. For example, Odyssey, Rodrigo claimed that he sold his project, that Odyssey, Rodrigo is the developer behind Odyssey, and he claimed he sold the project, but actually he just went private because Truffer teams claimed that they still work with him.
So are they doing this out of fear?
I think so. They just saw that a lot of attention from the researchers and from journalists too, like you are in. You posted and published a lot of articles about them. So I think they just were afraid of being that famous.
Like they want to brag about what they're doing,
yeah,
but they don't want what they're bragging about to be too popular.
I think it's just their experience. Yeah, they start the thing and they're excited to show it to everyone, kind of, you know, that hacker in a hoodie, and now he has attention and they want to show off. But when they see the consequences, for example, researchers start chasing them often and more successful, they are like, oh no, it's not what I need, because, you know, it's not just time consuming, but it's also about money. Whenever we report the certificates, or team IDs, it's they lose money.
I mean, so Amos was huge in 2023, 2024. When it left that market, did it leave a void? I mean, so who fills the void today, or is it still just the Wild West? There's still no malware family that was as big as Amos was.
I it was mentioned earlier, there's a lot of forks to this main project, and I don't know about all the dev side of it too much. I just know that over time, as a reverse engineer, they've gotten really more and more annoying, these samples.
More sophisticated.
Yeah, that's a better way of saying it. To me, it's just more annoying
for you.
So what confuses me about it is, I know that you mentioned, Ksenia, that they kind of disappeared, but not really. So what we're still seeing, is this still Amos? Like these files that are still popping up here and there? Because like all the detections on VT, most of them, I'm not saying nothing mean about them, but a lot of people have the same detection that says that it's Amos, and it's been really hard sometimes, at least for me, to distinguish between, like, all right, so this is this, because they share so much code base that it's like, all right, so you have to look at very specific things to tell, like, okay, this is attributed to this group. So I feel like when the void happened, where they kind of went away for a bit, there was still so many lookalikes that it kind of felt like you were dealing with the same kind of files anyways. Like, at least that's how I felt. And I was looking at a sample yesterday that was like so complicated, and I opened it up in Binary Ninja, and within the, like, even the main function was all messed up, and I'm like, oh my god, I don't want to deal with this. And when I saw there was some detections for it, and it said Amos, and I'm like, really, is this Amos? Like, this is kind of way more complicated than I thought it was going to be. But yeah, so I feel like there's so much overlap with all of these info stealers. They kind of start to blur. For me, there's very specific indicators. And you'll see sometimes I post on Twitter and I don't say any attribution at all. I'm like, here's the thing. And then someone will like comment on the bottom and be like, oh, this is attributed to this. And I'm like, oh, that's great. All right, good. I didn't have to figure that out because it's too much for me.
speaking of attribution, you found a lot of things by the DPRK recently. When I was looking at your feed, like just in preparation for the show, I've seen DPRK pop up quite a few times.
They love macOS. You know, it's interesting. That is the biggest APT related group that, you know, we see. And those are the more interesting samples and like entire like infection chains to look at. I feel, and they've leveraged, correct me if I'm wrong, they've leveraged ClickFix related stuff as well in the interview processes and stuff like that. So they're also leveraging, they're all learning from each other essentially. I'll pass that on because I think that you've seen some of that too.
Yeah, but there is tricky thing because it seems like Russian threat actors, cyber criminals, they just learn out of articles and everything. It seems like that, or maybe AI helps in that. So they started using like kind of same this like DPRK key.
Okay. Good,
oh my god! Oh, you know when you know. Well, when you speak five languages, it's kind of sometimes messy. And here the things are more blurred because now it's kind of harder to distinguish. Is it like North Korean guys or Russian? Or also we should mention that pretty often China use North Korean hackers as their puppets, like, you know, they can use them to not show themselves that they do some attacks because they allies, so they collaborate much. And at that point,
I just want to say one thing: attribution is hard. Is that is the key thing.
I mean, especially on macOS, because on Windows there are a lot of researchers and they already like a lot of information, a lot of things you can find in open sources. Yes, but on macOS, like few of us do that, and we just started doing it a few years ago. It feels like that at least.
Yes,
and we just build it. I think with years it will be better. I hope so.
It's great because you go to OBTS and it's like you meet every researcher you've talked to in the same place. And it's like, that's crazy.
Yeah, there needs to be extra security in that place. It's like having the president, the vice president, and the secretary of state in the same building.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's cool.
Chris, I want to loop back to something, and then Ksenia, I'll ask you about Not Null OS X next. You mentioned that the malware you're seeing is getting more sophisticated. Can you talk about what exactly are you seeing that you know is such?
All right, so let's talk about
more Trojan.
Yeah, let's talk about the good old days. All right, so the good old days,
plain text.
So
with no obfuscation, nothing.
So good old days. What is that? 2-3 years ago, I think. Around there. You'll get a new sample, zero detections on virus total. Couldn't believe it. Everything is clear text. Like, so you would just open it up in Binary Ninja and you knew exactly what it did. You know, and then you look like, you know, the most amazing person in the world because you figured out what it did. And it was super simple, you know, and that was cool. And there was a lot of learning around that time, too. And as we researchers started to post more about this, blog more about it, you know, that's the cat and mouse game. Then threat actors started to add obfuscation. And at first it was super simple stuff, like a single byte XOR, you know, it's like, which still happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we're still dealing with languages like, you know, like C, C++, Objective-C, which is the best language ever. And, you know, some Swift stuff, but then something happened around the adoption of like Go and Rust and all this stuff, and now Go garble, which is like the worst thing in the world to look at. So for anyone that's not aware, it's basically like an obfuscator for symbols, if I remember correctly, and it basically just makes it really hard to tell what function calls what and like where to start looking at the sample. And a lot of time is spent there, so static analysis has become much more difficult. And now what's interesting about this is the Windows folks, if anyone's listening that's a Windows reverse engineer, they're like, yeah, we've been dealing with that for like 15 years. But, you know, macOS malware is slowly getting more and more complicated. And now often I run into a sample where I open it up in Binary Ninja and everything's a mess. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to look at this. I'll just run
exactly.
it and see what happens and deal with it. So yeah, a lot more complicated.
It's not like traditional code in the sense where it has like a logical flow. It sort of just jumps around.
There's ways of adding complication that, like, let's say this function calls this function, it breaks that parent relationship, like that relationship between functions. So it makes it a little bit more difficult. Mm-hmm. That's one way of obfuscating things. Another way is like string stuff. So like, I don't know, like a command, you'll do like a XOR is most common, the encoder, but then there's like more complicated string related obfuscation that you can do. So there's multiple layers to it. At first we had like very simple stuff. Like you can literally just put this on. What's that tool? The chef tool. Forgot what it's called right now. Cyber Chef. Yeah, you just grab the encoded string and you're like, put this on here. And it's
Base 64.
Base 64, something simple. Now it's gotten more complicated. It's because of researchers, you know, spending time with it, talking about it, and they want to make it more and more difficult for people to understand what it does.
Sometimes during the day, I can see like 50 samples of Odyssey, like kind of a little bit different groups, like in... Among 50 samples, you have like four different groups of obfuscations in the samples. So it's kind of crazy. They just they try to bypass static analysis and Yara. They try to bypass antiviruses and EDR solutions, I think, by that.
Yeah. So, and again, they just want to bypass whatever tool they can. So they being the threat actors that are developing this stuff. And they'll play around with VirusTotal too. Like they'll upload stuff and see, you know, is it being detected? Yeah.
I think they also check it. For example, with Clean My Mac, we don't sell to Russia. We don't do business with Russia, but we saw kind of detect in Russia, and we were like, was it a threat actor testing like new malware?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Speaking of Moonlock, earlier this month, you guys released a report on Not Null OS X that, surprise, surprise, targets cryptocurrency. Do you want to talk a little bit about that finding to sort of tie this back into ClickFix?
Yeah, I think your audience will like it because we dive deeper into a person who was behind that sample we found, and it was the guy who was initially the very first developer of macOS Stealer. Like he popped up, his advertisement popped up in the end of 2022. So it was like the very first guy. He was working with Amos too, but he was kind of scammed by Pinger, who is kind of developer behind Amos. And he was offended, and he wrote a post in 2024, like, I will come back with a new super cool Stealer. You will see me soon. Like, I'm working on it. He had a Telegram channel, and he even recorded the videos of, he's working on the code, and you could see some, like, functions there. But he disappeared after that, and we were like, the guy just promised and never did it. So we were like a little bit disappointed by him. And now, like months ago, we saw, actually he approached Gonji and he was like, hello, that's me.
So just to make sure he was attributed to the
problem. So that's kind of funny part. Yeah, and so we started like the collaboration and we're working in collaboration on that. And the Stealer he released was pretty advanced. Like it was written in Go. As Chris already mentioned, it's a pain for us to deal with it statically, like static analysis of Go malware kind of complicated. So we also went, as Chris said, we went to dynamic analysis to just deal with it faster. Yeah, we saw he did like many modules for the Stealer, and he still plans to do like bare solution for remote access Trojan, and to add some additional capabilities. And also he mentioned that his main goal is to exfiltrate iCloud credentials, and they are working on that. So guys, be prepared.
Can you walk us through what exactly this social engineering attack does specifically?
Yeah, so first of all, we have to mention that developer is not responsible for delivering malware. They develop the malware, and then traffer groups, they do delivering part. And now they came up with the idea that they need to, that their approach should be more individual, as I mentioned in the beginning. So they are targeting people who have at least like 10,000 bucks plus in their holdings. And we saw that kind of 2 years ago and 1.5 years ago, Luma Stealer, like it's a Windows Stealer, they did scrapper for Twitter, for X, and they were looking for crypto addresses, crypto wallet addresses, so they could check if this a big target or not, and then they can approach the person. And here kind of the same thing, that they didn't want to waste their time for people who don't have much assets. And and at this moment they kind of were mentioning, like, they send the document to the person, and the Google document, kind of fake Google document, and it says that you need to update your Google API connector or something, and later you see the click fix comments, instructions, how to do that, how to update Google API connector. It's kind of a little bit the same thing, but it's not like as we saw before on the phishing pages, websites. It's already more targeted. It's in the document for a particular person. It can be adjusted to that person. For example, oh, that's document about your project or our future collaboration or whatever.
Oh, interesting. I'm seeing on Moonlocks, I'm looking at the report right now, and there is a section about it being a fake wallpaper app. Like it's parked at a domain, like a malicious domain.
Yeah, that's actually another part of our investigation, because we saw initially we saw Gonca's post about that click fix thing, and then we decided to check to threat hunt, to go and check what our users have, kinda. And we saw among names that wallpaper thing, kinda, that app, and we started looking for it. We saw additional distribution methods, like they use YouTube videos and description in the YouTube videos, and they put their link kinda to the app. But it was a fake website with a malicious app already.
It's an interesting example, because it shows, I mean, this particular malicious wallpaper domain isn't necessarily targeted towards developers. It looks like it's targeted just towards everyday people.
It's about everyday people too.
The image I'm looking at, it says, I don't want to read the domain here on the podcast, but It's like wallpaper.com basically. And when you click on it, the webpage says install wallpaper, and it looks, I mean, the website looks pretty legit. I mean, it's like a nice looking webpage. It says step one, open terminal. Step two, paste and run this command. And it's got like a little button where you could quick copy the code. And then it says step three, pick a wallpaper and make your desktop come to life.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't help but think like, oh, your desktop's going to come to life after this.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a good example because it shows just like how widespread ClickFix is, and it's targeting developers, it's targeting people with cryptocurrency, and it's just targeting everyone.
I just wanted to say that that YouTube angle, to have that one YouTube video, that's pretty clever. I think that was pretty cool that they used YouTube like that. I mean, I know they're doing bad stuff, but it's still interesting that they leveraged YouTube as like another landing page, essentially, so that you can go to the malicious site. I think that's pretty interesting. Because I think in the blog post, it said that it was like an old YouTube account, like 10 years old or something like
that. So hijacked account is with Google Ads accounts the same. And actually, I think it's like another consequence we see from stealers, because we always talk about them like they just after your crypto, after, you know, after your information, like private info, they can like use it for extortion later or something. But we have another one consequence here. It's like they can hijack your account, which is like 10 years old account, and use it for fueling their campaigns. And that's scary. And also for supply chain attack, if they compromise the developer, they can push the malicious update to libraries you were working on. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So that's a really good point, because info stealers are usually talked like bad about, like, oh, they're not, it's not that big of a deal. It's just an info stealer, you know, like who cares? Even though I think Jamf's report touches on this a lot. Info stealers have changed drastically now, and now they're like very Trojan like. They're not just stealing and leaving. Now they're stealing and staying, which is interesting as an approach. But yeah, so I find that to be pretty interesting how that's developed over time and evolved.
Right. Yeah. I mean, info stealers aren't the smash and grab that they used to be. They kind of want more persistence on your machine.
Yeah. So the threat is there where an info stealer, yeah, it might just steal some creds or something from like a regular user. But if it's a developer at a big company, then it can have like really big, like devastating consequences. And it's just an info stealer, you know?
I would also add here that you should verify sources. Like, for example, if you have suspicious website and you're not sure, you can use like virus.org, yeah, to check verdicts of other vendors. Also here in MacPaw, we have dedicated page where you can submit the suspicious file and you can get a help from us. We can analyze it and tell you if it's like a good or bad thing. And maybe, Erin, you can share the link for so people can use it in the future. Yeah, and also talking about supply chain attack, we started the topic a little bit. Maybe in the next podcast we will talk about that more. But if you're a developer and you work with different libraries, yeah, and you have other dependencies, maybe you should follow the cool down window rule, yeah, for updating that stuff. If you see like the new like the update, yeah, for your library, wait 24-48 hours at least, so researchers community can check it, verify it, and you'll see if it's like good thing or no.
One more I'm gonna add one little thing that may help. If you see a curl pipe to bash for some reason, okay, I know Homebrew does this, you know, so it's hard to say it's bad, but most of the time it's bad. If you see a command that has curl, starting with curl, and it pipes over to bash, that means it's executing whatever it's downloading from the internet. So, you know, be mindful of that, even though Homebrew does it, but whatever.
Chris, Ksenia, thank you so much for coming on Security Byte. It was wonderful to have you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you a lot.